This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Rio in chaos after the lights went out in one of the biggest cities in South America. The power cut turned the traffic lights black and left residents resorting to candle power. As air conditioning units failed, others cooled off on the streets.
Could it happen here?
Police and traffic officials facing major setbacks after a massive blackout plunges much of the country into darkness. As many as 60 million people in the country's largest cities were in complete darkness.
Blackout. It's already hit North America. At 4:15 on August 14th, 2003, a new record blackout shut down the Northeast and the Midwestern United States, closing stores, services, and traffic lights for 45 million Americans. Another 10 million people in Ontario, Canada lost power, too. California learned the new words rolling blackouts earlier this decade as Enron milked the state. A line failure in 2005 hit most of Southern California. A report in late 2008 predicted Great Britain would lose up to 25% of its power production by 2015. The previous May, tens of thousands of homes lost electricity when a nuclear power plant and a coal station shut down unexpectedly. Serious blackouts shutting down the mining industry damaged the economy of South Africa. In January 2008, the entire national grid there approached collapse. Power cuts are common throughout the developing world, from India to Iran to Nigeria, where the power might come on for a few hours a day. The International Energy Agency has warned we are running out of oil for electricity generation. The official statement from Fatih Birol is that we have passed the peak of world oil production, losing up to 9% of capacity annually in the coming years. Unofficially, on November 9th, the UK Guardian newspaper reported the oil situation is much worse. A senior IEA official admitted a coming oil shortage has been downplayed in order to avoid panic in the markets and to placate the Americans. The IEA has denied it. No worries. We can always fall back on good old coal to keep the lights on, maybe for 100 years. The climate may be wrecked, sure, along with the West Virginia mountains, but the computers and the traffic lights will still work. Maybe not. Our guest today is Richard Heinberg, famous for his revelations on peak oil and other dwindling resources. Now Heinberg's new book, Blackout, examines the myths about coal. What if the hundreds of years of power we were promised simply isn't true? How soon could the lights go out for hundreds of millions of North Americans depending on dirty coal for our electric world?
Come and listen, you fellas, so young and so fine, and seek not your fortunes in the dark, dreary mines. It will form as a habit and seep in your soul, till the stream of your blood runs as black as the coal.
Richard Heinberg is a senior fellow at the Post Carbon Institute and a prolific author on resource depletion. His latest book is Blackout, Coal, Climate, and the Last Energy Crisis from New Society Publishers. Richard, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
You know, you came to fame, it seems to me, through your early prediction of peak oil and its impacts with books like The Party's Over and Power Down. What brought you to the so-called energy of the past, namely coal?
Well, it's clear that oil production is, in fact, hitting its peak of production right about now. And the world is in the jaws of what I call the oil price trap. In other words, it costs about $60 to $70 a barrel to bring on new production capacity. And at above about $80 a barrel, the economy goes into recession. So we're in a very, very narrow window where we're able to recover the economy somewhat. But as soon as the recovery really picks in, then we'll see oil prices rise above that $80 level, and the economy will go back into recession again. And this same phenomenon is going to happen with all other non-renewable resources, one by one, as they gradually become scarce. Now, coal is the energy resource that we've had sort of as our ace up the sleeve. Everybody assumes that we have 200 years worth of coal, but a series of new reports question that received wisdom, and it looks from these reports as though global coal supplies could peak in production within the next 15 to 20 years, and that's true also here in the United States, which we tend to think of as the Saudi Arabia of coal. So this is, I think, enormously important information because coal is the energy source that has provided economic growth for the less industrialized countries over the last decade or so, particularly China and India. And it's also the fuel that is most implicated in climate change in terms of the carbon intensity of coal. So we really need to rethink coal. A lot of the information that we're using for the basis of both energy policy and climate policy is probably very far off the mark.
Well, you bring up an important point. How do we know what coal figures to trust? Who does these calculations?
Well, interesting question. The official statistics on coal reserves are compiled through a very lengthy and complicated process that ultimately starts with geologists on the ground working with pick and compass in the old-fashioned way. And then they estimate how much of the total resource can be extracted at current market prices with current technology. That information filters up to national agencies like the U.S. Department of Energy or U.S. Geological Survey that do statistical surveys from time to time, and that information then gets passed up to a team in Britain that compiles the international picture from all of the countries in the world that produce coal, and then that goes into the International Energy Agency, BP, World Energy Council, and other annual reports. The problem is that many countries don't have the facilities to really do proper coal surveys, and they only update their surveys, say, once every decade or two. And many countries, like the U.S., the U.S. last updated its National Coal Survey in the 1970s. And there's every evidence to suggest that as time goes on, as more careful surveys are done, the amount of recoverable coal booked as reserves tends to go down, and often quite dramatically, by up to 90% or more.
Well, in both the United States and China, and I'd like to talk a little bit about China, the whole idea is that they can duplicate, it seems, the car economy, and then they're going to build and build and grow and grow, and coal is the backstop to all of that. How long do you think that could go on?
Well, probably not much longer. China is using over twice as much coal as the United States right now, with only half the reserve base. And China has been extracting coal at absolute maximum rates over the past few years. The outlook for Chinese coal production is really not good at all. Probably Chinese coal production will peak within the next decade, and that's going to have enormous economic impact on that nation because they get over 70% of their total energy from coal. The Chinese economic miracle has really been built on coal, and so when their coal becomes more expensive and difficult to extract, when production starts to decline, it's going to be very difficult for that country to make up for those shortfalls in energy from other sources. Now, already China is looking around the region and has recently bought a coal mining company in Australia, which is the country that exports the most coal in the world. Up to this point, coal has been primarily a regional commodity. It's used in the countries that produce it. For the most part, global coal trade has been relatively minor. But that's a trend that's starting to change. There's more coal being exported and imported now. Coal is being moved around by ship increasingly, and the competition for that coal trade is heating up. A specific example of that is China, as I've already mentioned, and India. India has very large coal industry, depends on coal for its economic growth, and India is already having coal supply problems, very serious coal supply problems. So India is looking in the same places that China is, namely Australia, Indonesia, and Russia. And so there's going to be increasing competition in Asia and Eurasia in years ahead for whatever coal can be exported.
Well, you've done tons of research into the numbers, Richard, and when you add it all up, the title of the book seems to say it all. Are you saying industrial society could go into a blackout stage?
That's a very enormous and difficult statement to make because the implications are so dire. But when I look at the data, it's hard to escape that as a very real possibility unless industrial societies change course and begin very soon with a really unprecedented, dramatic effort to develop alternative energy sources and to reduce energy consumption. The prospects are very, very serious. Already over 100 countries around the world are suffering from severe energy shortages. For example, in Pakistan, in even the largest cities, the lights are off for up to 10, 12, 15 hours a day. Now, this is a country that depends upon electricity for pumping water, for basic services that civilized societies depend on. And so this has enormous implications. As blackouts spread to more and more countries, it's going to be more and more difficult for governments to maintain their basic services to society, and political instability is likely to spread as a result. This is a problem that's entirely foreseeable, but unfortunately, in very few countries are there really coordinated efforts to fend it off.
California had some rolling blackouts a couple of years ago, and a recent report says even Britain may feel the pinch.
That's right. Britain is highly vulnerable, not necessarily over the next year or two, but looking out to 2015 and beyond. Many reports have suggested that Britain simply does not have enough electrical generating capacity. Now, it's ironic because Britain is where the Industrial Revolution started. On the basis of British coal, for many years, Britain was the world's foremost coal producer. And back when the very first survey was done of British coal, back in the 1860s, it was forecast that Britain would have 900 years worth of coal. But, of course, British coal is practically gone. The British coal industry was taken apart during the Thatcher administration in the 1980s, and almost none of it is left. So Britain is depending on natural gas for generating a lot of its electricity now, and that natural gas is coming increasingly from Russia. So the security of supply of electricity in that country is highly questionable, and they really don't have a good plan B at this point. And once again, this is a story that's being repeated in country after country around the world.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock Green Radio right here in San Francisco on KKGN. Find us every Sunday night at 10:30 on 960 AM. This is Radio EcoShock. We're talking with Richard Heinberg about his new book, Blackout, Coal, Climate, and the Last Energy Crisis. Well, as you might know, Richard, many of my listeners are hoping coal will run out, or at least get hard to get to, before we load up the atmosphere to the point of climate collapse. You're the first person I've seen who has the figures to maybe answer that question. Will coal depletion save us from ultimate climate change?
Well, if we were still using the IPCC studies of a decade ago, the International Panel on Climate Change of the UN, if we were still using those studies that said that our goal should be to keep carbon emissions such that we could maintain only 450 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere, then probably coal depletion would get us there. But as I'm sure most of your listeners know, the more recent studies of climate impacts, particularly those done by Jim Hansen of NASA, are showing that even at 380 parts per million, which is where we are right now with carbon concentration in the atmosphere, even at that level, we're already seeing catastrophic impacts, the Arctic ice melting, glaciers melting, sea levels rising, increasing extinction rates, and so on. So we really can't afford to go to 450 parts per million, and it looks as though an upper boundary is going to have to be somewhere in the range of about 350 parts per million. Now, in order to get there, we're going to have to curtail the use of coal altogether. within the next 10 to 20 years. And that's going to be an enormous economic and technological challenge for not only for the highly industrialized societies of the U.S. and Europe, but especially for the rapidly industrializing countries of China and India.
Well, looking at the United States, it's an enormous structure when we add in the mining unions, the railroads where Warren Buffett has a stock in moving coal. We get into Peabody Coal and all the lobbying possibilities. I wonder if it is possible that climate activism, perhaps after some storms or some terrible heat waves, will put the pressure on the coal industry. Is there a chance of reducing the coal industry in the United States?
Well, this is where I think my book could help, because right now everyone's assumption is that we have enormous amounts of coal that will last us for at least a couple of hundred years, that will be cheap to produce for long into the future, and therefore our only choice is whether to burn coal and let the climate be damned, or burn coal and try to capture the carbon from that coal with carbon sequestration technologies that are very expensive to develop and really aren't ready yet. Now, if we factor in the reality, the increasingly apparent reality that coal is not going to be abundant and cheap in the future, that we could see much higher coal prices, possibly 3 to 5 times current prices within the next 10 to 15 years, and declining production, that changes the economic picture enormously. That means that present day investments in new coal power plants simply are not good investments from an economic standpoint. Even if we ignore the climate impacts, coal is going to play a reducing role in our energy mix over the next couple of decades, and coal power plants that are built today are going to be economic albatrosses around the energy industry's neck. So I think it's really important that that economic data is factored in to our energy decision-making as soon as possible, because otherwise I think we're going to make very bad decisions about how to deal with our energy future and climate change.
Before we forget, could you give us some web addresses where people can find out more about your book, Blackout, and about your own work, perhaps?
Well, I'd suggest right at the top of the list would be www.postcarbon.org, postcarbon.org. That's the website of Post Carbon Institute. I'm a fellow with that organization, and we're doing, I think, some groundbreaking work on bringing together experts from related disciplines, climate change, food issues, energy issues, to see how all of these interact and how we can develop cross-disciplinary policies that will bring us on track to redesign our economy for a post-carbon world.
Well, I discovered your fascinating article, Our Evanescent Culture, from newsletter number 209, your newsletter, and it seems you question whether knowledge itself could collapse, a kind of information blackout. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. Well, when one begins to grasp the fragility of our electrical generating and transmission infrastructure here in the U.S. and around the world, that raises a big question. You know, how vulnerable is our whole system for information storage and retrieval? Basically, our whole modern system for recording and retrieving cultural information, scientific information, medical, news, on down the line, everything from pictures from the Webb Space Telescope to book and music that are now being digitized that used to be available through physical media. In effect, we're placing a huge bet on our species' ability to maintain an electrical civilization far into the future. And if that's not possible, if in fact the grid is maintained only intermittently, or if we have very serious problems with supplies of electricity in the future, we could enter into a kind of new dark age where so much knowledge, hard-won knowledge, is forgotten, that our whole civilization would descend to a much lower level.
Well, you've discovered so many of the possible weaknesses in our civilization. Do you still have some optimism that the next generation or the next coming generations will survive with lives worth living?
Well, you know, I talk to young people about these issues quite frequently, and of course, it's very difficult information to take in for a young person because, you know, just coming to the scene and getting the sense that the world's resources have been overused by the older generations, and you know, there's nothing left at the table. But from another standpoint, it's a very exciting time to be alive because over the next couple of decades, we are going to have to redesign almost our entire system of civilization on planet Earth, everything from our economic system to how we produce and distribute food, how we live in our homes and heat them, and our electricity system. So much is up for grabs that the opportunities are absolutely endless for young people to make an enormous difference in the times ahead. So once we get beyond the initial shock of realizing that we live in a very vulnerable world, then there's, I think, an enormous sense of responsibility and opportunity to do something about that that could give life a new sense of purpose.
As we wrap up our time today, is there something I've missed, anything you'd like to leave us thinking about?
I think the one thing that I would mention is the economic crisis that our country has gone through over the past 18 months or so is, in my estimation, a kind of warning flag. We've known in theory that there were limits to economic growth, that the world's resources are finite, and at some point, limits to non-renewable resources like oil, coal, minerals of various kinds would begin to constrain economic activity. I think that's happening, and it's a very loud and clear wake-up call that we need to redesign our economy so that it's not based on continual growth in consumption of resources, but that it's designed to fit within Earth's renewable carrying capacity. If we get that right, then I think we will have a sustainable civilization. If we don't get that right, then we have a very, very difficult time ahead of us.
I couldn't agree more. You've been listening to Richard Heinberg. His latest book is Blackout, Coal, Climate, and the Last Energy Crisis from New Society Publishers. It's a must-read for anyone concerned with peak energy, our climate, and, well, just our future. Thank you so much, Richard.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. Our opening song clip was from Kathy Matea. Find a lot more green audio at ecoshock.org.